The scripture begins with a barn that has been torn down, needing to be rebuilt. And no, I'm not talking about the parable that Jesus told. It begins with a story of a family, a particular barn that has fallen down. Did you catch it? As a pastor over the years, I have been a witness in the lives of many families at key transition points. Times when, particularly an older generation, has passed on. Those are times that can be a real blessing. You know, I think of my own relationship with my sisters when, you know, as my mother had her last illness and then died, and how our relationship flowered. But that's not always the case, is it? Such times can be fraught with a lot of dissension and division. Can be times when the barn completely falls down, that the family just disintegrates into dysfunction, if you will. I'm wondering if that isn't a little bit of the story behind how this particular scripture begins. For a man comes to Jesus, and he asks Jesus to step into the disagreement that he and his brother are having over the inheritance. That story may sound familiar for some of you. Perhaps you have been through a story of your own similar. Jesus, tell my brother to share the inheritance. But Jesus doesn't step into the middle. Now, as a person who has a little bit of training in family counseling, I see what he's doing there. You know, he's a good therapist in some ways. You know, in family systems, you know that you've got, in conflict, you've got two sides that are at war who are oftentimes trying to draw somebody smack dab in the middle. And in many families, you know, one person or another gets drawn in and they become the focus of all the ire and all the flames. Well, Jesus, in this story, does not step into the middle. He kind of backs off and says, who am I to be an arbiter? Who am I to step in the middle of this to judge what should happen? Instead, Jesus did what he usually does at such times. He told a story. Kind of infuriating at some points. Not always sure that that's what marks a good therapist or not, because actually this is not therapy. This is good news. But he tells this story, and this story, and by the way, is only found in Luke's gospel. You will not see it in Matthew or Mark or John. Oh, it's there, a little bit of it is there in this other gospel that's not in our Bibles, the Gospel of Thomas. But we don't pay attention as much to that one because it's not in what we have received as authoritative, the canon of the New Testament. Jesus tells this interesting story, and I think it's appropriate that, you know, to follow how Luke sort of, the setting that Luke put it in was in the form of a family dispute. And that's where this thing, because it's dealing with inheritance, yes. But it's also dealing with the brevity of life. Now, as we hear this story of the rich man who's basically having a good deal of success in his life, we cannot fault the man for trying to save. Saving is a good thing, isn't it? I mean, those of us who are getting on in years, we're concerned whether we will have enough for our later years, because we don't want to become, what is it, a burden on our children, right? And so it is a good thing to save. And I don't believe that Jesus is here saying to those of older years, don't save. But I think he is trying to put things into a bit of perspective. Those of you who were here when we were going through that pre-worship song, that's what that song was about, putting our lives into perspective, how indeed our lives in the great course of things are but a teeny tiny bit. In the scope of eternity, we are but, as the song said, maybe an inch or less. And he tells the story of this person building a barn, actually tearing down an old barn to build a bigger one, to make sure that what he has will have a place, so that when he needs it later on, he can go to that place and take it. Now, I think in the song, I hear a little bit of echoes of, who was it? He had a many-colored coat back in the Old Testament. Who was that? Joseph, yes. Joseph, who was sold by his brothers into slavery in Egypt, and he went down to Egypt, and somehow he managed to find his way into Pharaoh's court, and he became Pharaoh's, the person who collected up the grain and built many, many barns that kept the grain that, through the times when there was plenty, so that when famine came, there would be enough. And it was actually his saving that made room for his family to make it into a place where they could survive. Otherwise, if they had not gone down into Egypt, would they have survived? We don't know. We see in this story God's hand at work. Of course, as with a lot of stories, in the Bible there's a two-edged part to this, because them going down into Egypt also eventually led to their slavery when a Pharaoh came along who did not remember Joseph. And then there was a whole new story to be told. The story really of the birth of Judaism, the birth of a people. I hear all of this as I pay attention to this story of Jesus. And I'm reminded of how easily families can fall apart. It's not hard, A few weeks back, we were focused upon some of the fruit of the Spirit, and some of you may remember how I sort of likened them to muscles, and I was sort of used my. Those of you who don't know, I have struggled a little bit with some knee problems and stuff, and part of that struggling had to do with muscles that were overcompensating for certain parts of my anatomy that weren't operating quite right. And eventually they went on strike, and how actually this is a tale of dysfunction, and how we need to exercise our muscles to get them to be working right. And I liken the fruit of the Spirit to muscle, not just something that we pluck off a tree, but muscles, like muscles in the human body that need to be exercised, to be used, to be put into practice on a regular basis, and how they sometimes work together and sometimes work against each other, which is how muscles often do. Thank you, Ellis, for pointing that out. And they like joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, those fruits of the Spirit. Well, when our fruit of the Spirit are not operating rightly, other things come into play. We start using other muscles that are dysfunctional. And I think we heard some of those dysfunctions in our earlier scripture. Were you paying attention to them? Whenever the fruit of the Spirit are lifted up in the New Testament, there's always another list. This is sort of blessings and curses, sometimes we call them. The fruit and the fruit of the Spirit and the fruit of the flesh, if you will. Let's see, there are things like bitterness, vengefulness, spite, slander, tendency to mouth off in ways that insult and humiliate others, lying. You know the list. The list could go on and on and on. And in many families and in many persons, those muscles are given a lot of exercise. and they become dominant, and families, you see families falling apart when those muscles are used, don't you? Part of the rebuilding of barns has to do with exercising the real fruit, the real blessings that God bestows upon us, the abilities that God gives to us to make them stronger. In families, churches, societies even, that focus upon these things are indeed blessed themselves. Now, in the story, we are reminded of the brevity of life and how we can save and save and save, but the truth is, none of us knows the length of our life. You know, we could go out on the highway today and there could be an accident and our life would be over. It makes sense to pay attention to the things to which we need to really store up those treasures. And you sort of wonder about this family, the family that Jesus told the story after it, this family, this broken down barn. You wonder. Barn raising is not an individual thing. I'm reminded when I think of barn raising, of an Amish barn raising. Has anybody ever participated or seen one of those? What happens in an Amish? The one you saw, Steve, what did you see?
Everybody joining together.
Yeah.
Raise it one day.
Okay. Just do it. Yeah.
I think most people remember that Ron Green was involved with reconstructing a barn up on Manor Road. Carl Stevens led us in that effort.
Oh.
And a lot of us were cooking and other people were running. I can't remember who was up on the roof. Did Carl get a team from Lancashire?
Anyone? Yeah? Okay. The Smith family. Okay, so we had somewhat of an Amish barn raising, though. Were there any Amish there? Can't remember? Okay. I've been a part of, there weren't Amish involved because of the place where I was at, there weren't Amish, but there were Mennonites and some others. And I remember being part of a team that was involved in trying to take down the old barn. Yeah. I remember being up on a ladder against a wall when this beeper I had on my belt went off, and I didn't hear it, but the people behind me heard the beeper and alerted me to it, and the beeper was telling me I needed to get home. This was prior to the birth of your sister, Caitlin. That's how I pull those things together. Yeah. Okay, barn raising is something done not just by one person. You notice in the story of the rich man, it was all about him. You know, it was about his barn. I shall tear down and I shall build something bigger. But the truth is, like with children, it takes more than one particular family to raise a child. It takes a village. I was reminded of that this morning as I was watching, you know, I was watching that CBS morning show. And they were talking about the resurgence of heroin use, especially in suburban areas, and how it has actually doubled in the last so many years. And it told the story of a mother who lost her son because of this, who is on a nationwide campaign, really getting communities to pay attention to this, reminding everybody that it takes a village to raise a child. and that we are all about the business of barn raising. We are a part of building up families. We are a part of building up our community. We are a part of building up this church, each and every one of us. We don't know how long we will be a part of this, but that is okay. But we are called in the process to simply share what we have. We are called to be, how does that song go that we're about to sing? We're called to be cheerful givers. Aren't we going to sing something about that? Lord, thou dost love.
I only play it.
You only play it. Okay. Well, okay, what number is it? 387. Let's complete this sermon with a song. 387. Yes, the Lord, thou dost love the cheerful giver who with open heart and hand blesses freely as a river that refreshes all the land. Would you stand if you are able and let's sing it together.